development, investing in getting to know you better and breaking through the barriers that are holding you back, because that's the only thing keeping you from being everything you want to be in life. It's just where you are right now. We're stuck in things. And as I tell people, when you go to that, if you go to that Climber Champions, which is just kind of a little taste test of what it's about, you're going to walk away and you're going to go, wow, I never knew, I didn't know. That's my favorite. People say, well, what's Climber all about, Mary Jo, these personal mastery classes? And I always tell them the first class is always about learning about things you didn't know you didn't know. And if that sounds a little strange to you, trust me, that's what goes on there. So you'll just come to new awakenings and new awareness. And the only, you know, the only pathway I know to change is to start with awareness. You have to become aware of things in your life that aren't serving you. And if you don't, are not aware of them, you can't change them. You can't make a pathway to success.
Can you spell that for me? Are you saying Climber?
Climber. Klemmer. Climber.
Okay.
His website. Okay? Great.
Thank
you. You bet. All right. Thanks, Eileen. All right. Any other announcements? Okay, let me put on mute, and then we'll jump in and finish up Chapter 7 and try to get through Chapter 8 and 9. That's my goal this morning, so that we can hopefully conclude our Flight Edge book, which is, for those of you who have been participating, I bet you're enjoying every minute. I love the book. I love the material. It really emphasizes and it tells me, you know, more about, you know, the success I've had in my life and what has helped me do it, and discipline and structure that really make a difference. So, okay, here I go. Okay, there we go. I've got everybody on mute. Great, so it was clear. All right, last week we were on Chapter 7, and we didn't finish it before we concluded, and I'm not quite sure exactly, so I'm going to finish the last two parts. And Chapter 7, we want to talk about the deceptive majority. And one of the statements that we hear about Manitek a lot is that all truth passes through three stages. First, it's ridiculed. Second, it's violently opposed. Third, it's accepted as being self-evident. And we use that language around talking about glycobiology a lot. And Jeff Olson in Flight Edge, he uses it about, you know, what happens in our world, looking at, you know, stuff that comes out in our world. And what happens to our world, we have a tendency to have people jumping on bandwagons all the time. Staying with the masses brings comfort, and the masses don't like to look at things as self-evident. They refuse to see things as self-evident until they hit that third stage. So it's like they'll look at something and they'll say, I don't believe it until it's absolutely proven, set in stone, and becomes so, you know, so well accepted that we look at it as self-evident. And Jeff Olson is saying that 19 out of 20 people are choosing the downward curve on the slight edge. In other words, they're using the slight edge to their disadvantage towards a failure versus towards a success ride, and part of that is their refusal to see things as self-evident, to jump on things as they come along in their early stages, because they look at them and they can say, wow, you know, I can look at this science of glycobiology and I can find that it's self-evident and I'm going to run with it. Doesn't mean we have all the science caught up to us, but we'll run with it. And instead, they stay with the masses in doubt and untrusting until they get, you know, to a point of it being self-evident. That holding us back, and it's not about glycobiology, because all of you have jumped on the bandwagon with glycobiology. You're not having a problem with that. And, of course, as time goes by, we of course, first were ridiculed in the 1980s. Everybody was telling Manitek that sugars, you know, all went through glucose conversion, and it was ridiculed. We've had some violent opposition to it. We're really starting to get into the self-evident stage with everybody and their brother trying to now copycat us in products and the science being so resoundingly accepted and now being taught in med schools and everything. So we're probably getting very close, if not on the edge of that third stage with glycobiology. But what are things in your life are you looking at that you're demanding the same level of self-evidence? Instead, the choice is that you stick with the masses and you stick in your comfort zone. And that's going to hold you back. So his whole conclusion in this part of the chapter was, you know, it's the deceptive majority. In other words, the majority is very deceptive. If we stay with the majority, we tend to keep doing the same things we've always been doing that aren't working for us. It's kind of like staying in your comfort zone. But it's easy because there's no, you know, you're not making yourself uncomfortable. But his attitude is find out what the majority is doing and then do the opposite, because typically they're not on track. You know, so that's his concept behind deceptive majority, that majority will be untrusting typically. They won't jump on, you know, and start things new and take risks. They're not risk takers because that's outside their comfort zone. So take a new approach in your life and start looking at things that are off the beaten path and aren't being done by the majority and see how it serves you. And that might really be something so unique for you. But it's out of your comfort zone, and it causes some dismay and discomfort because of that. The other thing Jeff brought up in Chapter 7 in Mastering the Slight Edge was what he found at his own funeral. And the other way you could title this section of that chapter would be what other people think of you is none of your business. Because what he did, Jeff was so cute, he talked about his first job at Texas Instruments. He started his first job at Texas Instruments, and of course, fresh out of college with a business degree, one of the first things people like, or business administration, MBA, they like to put you in the sales department, because if you don't understand marketing and sales, you're not going to get very far as a chief executive officer. So they want you to really have a flavor of every aspect of the business. So they stuck him in the sales department, and he hated sales. Now, we hear that from a lot of people that we try to get involved in network marketing, so they go, well, I don't like to sell. And of course, our response typically would be, well, it really isn't sales, it's really education. We're out there educating people. That's really what I do every day of my life, is I educate people about a breakthrough technology and how they can take back control of their health. Whether they jump on it or not is up to them. So I'm not selling, it's more educational. But he feared rejection. Does that sound familiar for a lot of you? Yeah, he feared rejection too. Here's a guy who's, multi-millionaire, and when he started in his career, he feared rejection too. And so he just decided to start, you know, he was doing some extra reading, like, because he was very committed to growing and reading and his own development. And he read an article about funerals, and when he read this article about funerals, he came to a phenomenal aha. And in the article about funerals, he was in a doctor's office or something, and he picked up a magazine. He found out the statistics is that only 10 people cry at any given funeral. And number two, the number one thing that impacts how many people show up at your funeral is the weather. And he was so disgusted by those statistics. He said, why am I planning my life and running my life around what other people think of me? If only less than 10 or less will cry when I die, and whether they show up at my funeral is going to be more dependent on the weather than what I ever do or accomplish in my life or what I ever mean to them in my life. So, you know, that's his conclusion he drew, and that's the section of the book that he's just trying to make a point. I don't think his point is that we should start attending more funerals. Does everybody get that? That's not what he's saying here. What he's saying is, if you look at the people that really truly have had phenomenal funerals, you can look at Mother Teresa, Martin Luther King, Gandhi, Lincoln, these are some of those he mentioned. He says, the one thing that's absolutely clearly true about each and every one of these people is they didn't care what other people thought about them. They didn't live their life worrying about what other people thought of them. So the fear of rejection for him, he threw right out the window. Because truly, if it doesn't matter what other people think of you, how can you keep harboring a fear of rejection? It doesn't matter. And as you know, if you've been on my calls in the past or in my Pathway Classics, there's a great book I keep recommending. If you have that need to be liked or that care about what other people think of me, there's a great book out there I constantly recommend. It's written by Terry Cole Whitaker, and the name of the book is What Others Think About Me Is None of My Business. So if you need more reading and education on that topic to get you over that hump, get that book. Okay, so that finishes off Chapter 7. Let's go on to Chapter 8. Chapter 8, he talks about faces of the slight edge. And what does he mean by faces? And what he's trying to say here is the faces are like, each one of them is like a power. It's a power of the slight edge. It's how to take the slight edge and use it to your advantage. You can harness these powers, and you can use them to pursue your dreams. So tapping into them and using them to pursue your dreams is what he's trying to suggest here. They're like tools to achieve your dreams that are based on slight edge philosophy. That all you need to do is affect the small differences in your life, every day of your life, and move forward. But what are the powers? What are the powers you want to tap into? What are the faces of the slight edge? And let's go through each and every one that he talks about in the book. The number one, he talks about power of momentum. And he lists, he says, every system in the world has rates of optimal growth, no matter what it is, whether it's a plant, whatever it might be, we all have optimal rates of growth. And a lot of people think that the faster the better, you know, the old story of tortoise and hare, and so the faster the better. You want to get there fast, you want to win there fast. And even in Manitech, well, you know, Manitech, for some reason, you know, they love to put presidentials on stage and say, I got there in 3 months or I got there in 6 months. And knowing that our nature tends to be comparative, I really can't stand that kind of approach because it makes people feel like they're not doing enough or they're not doing it right if they didn't get there in 3 months, when getting there in 3 months is ridiculous. You know, out of the 200,000 associates, or how many, hundreds of thousands, I don't know, we got a million, or how many associates, millions of associates that we have in Manitech. I think we're almost at 2 million or something. How many people got the presidential in 3 months or less? Like, one? I mean, it's so ludicrous. And one of the ones they were in Manitech touted one time on stage was somebody who brought a position, which I thought was even more fraudulent. I just don't like the whole approach. I don't like the attitude about saying you should get there in 3 months because it's preposterous. What you'd have to do that would be incredible. And most people aren't going to do. They're not going to contact 150 people a day. It's just not going to happen. It's not going to be your style or your ilk to do that. So, and you, I don't know if you'd be alive after 3 months of that kind of behavior pattern. Not real. It's not real. So the concept of being fast isn't always better. In fact, it's not better at all. The faster you go, well, you can end up being a lot slower. So too fast puts a person or a system at risk. And I can reflect to you, I know a lot of presidentials who did this business very fast. And if you're doing it very fast, let me ask you a quick question. Are you developing people? You can't be. You can't be developing people. That means you can't be developing yourself. So when you run with this and do it so fast, what happens is, not making the investment in yourself or allowing the people around you to make investments in them to grow them as people, and you're going to end up with a presidential downline that dissipates and disappears. And that's what's happened to a lot of these quick growers. They just as almost as quickly shrunk. So there's an optimal rate of growth, and even with my fastest growers in my business, I always tell them, you know, if you really want to grow this really quickly, here's a 2-year plan on getting to presidential. And I, so far, no one has actually done that in my downline, but I have a plan that can get you there in 2 years if you really want to do it quickly. But it's not, if you're committed to doing everything you need to do, you can do that. I think you can actually get there in 1 year if you commit. But the problem, again, gets into the fact that is faster better? And I'm going to suggest to you not. It's not better. So your optimal rate of growth, he quoted Peter Singe in the Fifth Discipline, the optimal rate of growth is always served best by a step-by-step approach of constant, never-ending improvement. And that's what it's about. It's simple disciplines compounded over time. The tortoise and the hare, and he said some people misconceive that as being fast versus slow, and it's not. It's called steady. Fast versus steady. Steady means no stops, no stops and starts, because you lose momentum. You do it every day. So the power of momentum, people, isn't momentum to catapult you to presidential in 3 months or less. It's the power of doing and implementing the simple disciplines every single day, and they compound over time. Kind of when I try to help people put systems in, the first 30 and last 30 minutes of every day, what does it need to look like? And you do it every single day. And you make a commitment. I'm going to contact 3 new people or 5 new people every day. And you do it every single day. That's the power of momentum. It's the simple discipline compounded over time, and that's what creates the momentum in your business. It's not the speed. It's the concept of simple disciplines every day compounded over time. And Mary Kay Ash, as we know, Mary Kay is the makeup queen. She said, give yourself something to work toward constantly. And notice it said constantly. That's the most important word in her statement. Give yourself something to work toward constantly. So it's a constant movement, constant action working towards the end result. Power of momentum. Tap into it, do it. Okay, number 2, the second power he talked about to harness is power of completion. And that is gigantic, and you'll get this out of your Klemmer work, too, if you go there, because we talk about leaving things incomplete. When you leave things incomplete in your life, every incomplete item in your life is something that your brain functions on. So you're spending time, invaluable time, in your mind and in your energy dedicated to incompleteness. And it's robbing you of moving forward. It robs you of being effective. It robs you of accomplishing your dreams in your life. So what's important is to sit down. You guys can do this today. Make a list. What are things that are incomplete in my life? When I find people that don't have their tax returns done or they haven't filed them in 3 years, I just go, I know that's killing you. Because as much as you can say, well, Rachel, it doesn't bother me, it does. It eats at you, it hounds at you, because you know the IRS could knock on your door any day. Why live that life? What is in you? What is your belief system? What are you doing? What is that self-destructive aspect in your life that causes you to do that? Because it is self-destructive. So start looking at what's incomplete. Why are we holding it to be incomplete? Why are we making commitment to hold things to be incomplete? Tax returns undone, take a look at that. What's undone in that? Did you borrow something you never returned? Or you have something in your life that you've never returned? I mean, some of this stuff for some of you is going to be, oh, man, Mary Jo, but that was like 4 years ago. To do it now, I'd really look silly. No, you wouldn't. You need to come to completion in it. It's not about what you look like. Again, go back and read the book. What others think of me is none of my business. It's about you doing it for you. Get it off your plate. Complete it. What commitment or promise remains broken? Wow, some of us could make a laundry list of that. We could take out a notepad and fill it up. What you need to do is come to a conclusion on it. Make those lists. Make some phone calls today. Drop some letters in the mail. Clean them up. Put them behind you. Complete it. Who remains open for forgiveness? Some of you stay, you want to be right. You got this program running in your life. Well, they hurt me, Mary Jo. They need to forgive me. I'm waiting for them. They need to call me. Oh, good luck. So hang on to that stuff. Keep those rocks in your knapsack that you're carrying around every day in your life, burdening you down so you never get where you want to go in life because you're waiting for somebody else to say I'm sorry. They might even not even know what you took offense to. They might not even have any idea. So what is it about calling them and saying, you know what, I've been holding this grudge for ages, and I just want to tell you I'm releasing it. I forgive you. Why do they have to ask for forgiveness? Does it say something like that, that has to be a prerequisite for you forgiving somebody, that somebody has to ask for it? I don't remember that. I don't see that as a concept that is, you know, a spiritual issue for us. I think that forgiveness is forgiveness. We forgive people whether they ask or not, whether they want it or not. What their reaction is to you giving them forgiveness is none of your business. You don't do it because you're looking for a reaction. If you are, then you shouldn't be interacting with people because you can't change them. You do it because it's the right thing to do. You do it so you get it off of your platter. You do it so you can have completeness in your life. So start looking at some of those issues out there where people have done you wrong and you're waiting for them to forgive you, but you're carrying the burden. Release it. Who needs to hear from you that I'm sorry, that you really are sorry? So maybe you need to step up to the plate and say that. What about your spouse? Oh, man, do we have issues around that? So, anyway, his whole approach, and I totally agree, this is something I will rubber stamp 1,000 times over. People live incompleteness in their lives, and incompleteness only steals from you. It robs you from moving forward. So if you can't move forward because you're incomplete, then the slight edge will mean nothing to you. You will be in a, you know, remember, you're either going upward or downward. So there's no concept of stability. It's either you're using slight edge to get you to success or you're catapulting to failure. So get over the incompleteness. Work on that. The third power is the power of habit. And, of course, the slight edge to me is all about habits. Every time he says, do the simple disciplines, what are we doing? We're talking about building new habits, you know. We fail to realize the power of habits. Habits are incredible. Whether the habit's to get up at 6 in the morning, go work out for half an hour, spend 20 minutes on quiet time. If that's your habit, that should be your habit. I try to do that in my presidential or bus program. It's all about building habits, getting people to do the same thing over and over and over again. The power is incredible. But there are two types of habits. There are those that serve us and those that don't serve us, right? So a habit is something that we do almost without thinking about. It becomes, you know, we do it, we've done it repetitively, and it comes naturally to us without second nature. We don't even have to think about it. It just happens in our life. So a habit, the creation of a habit, is a purely side edge. It's simple little actions that you repeat over time and time. So if you want to create a new habit, what do? You put it on your to-do list, and you do it every day, over and over, and the repetitive behavior creates it as a habit, and then soon it becomes, you don't even have to think about it. Your philosophy creates your attitudes, your actions, and results, and those create your life. So the concept and the purpose of this book, this light edge, is to give you structure for success by realizing the power of that slight edge and how it works for you. So you want to make the right choices every day and build the right habits. And some people say to me, well, Mary Jo, how do I get rid of a bad habit? Do I just focus on it? I say, absolutely not. That's the worst way. When you focus on something, does it go away or does it stay with you? It stays with you. So don't focus on bad habits. What you want to do is say, if you have a bad habit, let's say you sleep in the morning, that's a bad habit. Now, some of you go, oh, I don't think it's a bad habit, Mary Jo. It's the way I run my life. Great. If you think time isn't valuable to you, then that's where you are. Don't come to me and ask for success in your life around that. But, you know, I'm one of these people, hey, I get up at 6, 7 o'clock in the morning. I don't go beyond that. And I work out, and I do my quiet time, and you set habits up. You replace your habit of sleeping in every morning by setting an alarm and forcing yourself out of bed and doing it repetitively, day in, day out, day in, day out, and soon the old habit's gone. So you don't focus on the old habit, you just focus on new. Focus on replacing it. Come up with a new habit that replaces it. So that's how you get rid of bad habits, is replacing them with better habits that serve you. The next power that he talks about to harness around slight edge is power of reflection. And he talks specifically about being not necessarily being effective, and where have you heard that before? That's one of Mary Jo's big harping points about what is it? What are we doing? It's being effective is doing the right things. It's taking action, but it's not just keeping busy. It's not managing people's automatic orders. It's not reviewing the Internet success tracker 12 times a day. That's not effective. What is effective is doing the right things. It's out there sharing, prospecting, following up, nurturing your people. That's what it's about. Leadership development, self-development, making a dedication to support you and your personal growth. Those are the things that will make you effective. So an exercise would be to keep track of everything you do in a day for a week. Just take, and I have this as part of my process in presidential, the pathway to presidential class, and some of you are in that right now. And you know you have to do it for 4 weeks. I have an assignment, homework assignment, every week they have to keep track of everything they do, every day for 4 weeks. So just try to do that for a week. It'll drive you crazy. I mean, people get very frustrated with experience, but it leads to a couple things. Number one, it shows you how much time you waste, which is a gigantic aha for a lot of people. We waste a lot of time in our lives, and time is our only limited asset, so that's clear. But the second thing you can do is it's about self-reflection. And reflection, remember, power of reflection. Look back. Reflect on what you're doing. Look at what you're dedicating your time to. And ask every day the slight edge question. In each and every area of my life, what are the critical, simple things that are easy to do but also easy not to do? Did I do them? Did I move forward? Did I ride the success curve? Ask that about each of the things. As you write down what you did today, go back and analyze. Do some reflection. Now, the neat thing about this is that after you do this for a day, 2 days, week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, pretty soon you become like a heat-seeking missile. You're going to be like, and that's really how I run my life. I look at everything I do, and it's kind of like, could I have been more effective or not effective? What could I do better? I make choices every moment of the day. That's how my brain functions. It just works in that level. It's like choices. In fact, I have a lot of people that comment to me. They go, Mary Jo, how do you get so much done? And I look at them like, I couldn't conceptualize not getting so much done. And it's, as all of you know, if you who know me, you know I have tremendous joy. I have a lot of fun in life. And, you know, it's just a joy to be out there doing the things I do. But the issue is, what can I choose differently? When I get on an airplane to leave Peoria, Illinois, on Saturday.
Do I
stare out in La La Land on the airplane for a half hour, or do I pull something out of my briefcase? I have choices I can make every moment of every day. So I pull a book out of my briefcase, and I start reading. This is great reading time. It's a great time for me to be able to read. Or I take out my computer and I do a to-do list for next week. And I just wrap up all the things that need to be on that list. You know, it's about how, what am I doing? Reflecting on my time. What am I doing or not doing that's serving me? And just constantly saying, what are the slight edge? What are the simple things that are easy to do? Because isn't it easy just to take a little nap on an airplane? Isn't it easy just to kind of drift off into La La Land? Wouldn't it be easy to just buy a newspaper and get caught up in the funny section or reading the sports section or reading? And I'm not telling you not to choose downtime where you have R&R time. You need to build that in your life. But don't, you know, when you start building 6 hours in the middle of the day for R&R time, you got a problem. When you're working with power of reflection, you're going to reflect back and say, what could I have done differently? And the last power that he talks about is power of celebration. And all of us need to be in celebration. That's why in my trainings and my teachings I do, as well as Coach Roy, we always talk about wins. We always look for people's wins. A lot of people don't, they'll get done with a week and they won't even be able to acknowledge what they did do. All they do is focus on what they didn't get done. And some of you on this call are like that. You have a to-do list, and at the end of a week, all you do is kind of get the hammer out and say what you didn't accomplish. I want you to quit focusing on what you didn't accomplish and start focusing on what you did accomplish. Give yourself some celebration, you know? Pat yourself on the back. One of the stories, he also talked about one-minute manager. He says people feel good about themselves, produce good results. Absolutely. So when you hammer yourself all the time, you're not going to produce any good results. You're going to continue producing bad results because it's always about negative. So acknowledge yourself and acknowledge those around you as well. Nothing breeds success like more success. The story he tells is about this woman who is married. She has 30 years of marriage. She's in her 50s, and she was starving for affection. Her husband would never express himself, and she finally didn't know whether she could continue in the marriage. She just had enough, so she finally decided to approach her husband and tell her how she felt. So he told her, she went to him and she said, honey, I just want to tell you, I'm starving for affection. I never feel like, I don't feel like I'm appreciated. I don't feel like I'm loved. I don't know. And you know what his response was? Some of you women on this call will relate to this. He looked at her and he goes, well, honey, he says, 30 years ago I told you I loved you and nothing's changed. I love it. I think that story is so precious. Because we as women just tend to be more expressive about our emotional state. Men tend to be more closed. That's just it's not a judgment. It's just a tendency in our society. And it's so true, you know, that we spend days sometimes without hearing the words. And if our love language is words, affirmations from people, we're in big trouble if our husband doesn't communicate like that. But see, this husband never, ever occurred to him that he needed to do little things every day, a power of celebration or affirmation or positive reinforcement. It never occurred to him, never. Slight edge, repeating, affirming, and celebration things every day. That's what the slight edge is about. So power of celebration, it's about that. What can you do in your spousal relationship every day that's going to build that relationship? Again, you're either green or growing or you're ripe and rotting. And you need to look at your marriage and say the same thing. Marriages don't work unless they're fed, and you need to feed them. And power of celebration is great in that realm, as well as manage that business, of course. Okay, so those are the powers. They're all, to me, huge, incredible powers that you can just tap into and get them to work for you. Just go back in the outline and underline or take your highlighter and just highlight each of those powers and keep them in your brain. Keep working on them every day. All right, the next chapter I want to get through, and we got 15 minutes, so we're going to blitz through it. And it's 3 pages on the outline, and I apologize for that. I got into it so much because it really is one of my passions and my joys of life, and that's mastering yourself. It's about making that greatest investment you'll ever make, which is in yourself. Abe Lincoln, there's a great story about Abe Lincoln in a chapter, and of course this is all about self-development. Self-development, making that investment and growing you, because you're the one that's standing in your own way. You're the one that's stopping you from achieving anything you want in life. You. You're the one. Look in a mirror, and that's what's holding you back. If you wanted to be presidential by the end of last year and you didn't make it, look in a mirror. That's why. We are the ones that hold ourselves back. But the beauty of it is we also are ones that can catapult us forward. So choice. It's about choices. It's about making investments in ourselves so that we can make better choices. Abe Lincoln's story is he said, he talked about an axe, and he said, give me 6 hours to chop down a tree, and I will spend the first 4 hours sharpening the axe. In other words, he would spend twice as much time working on himself as he would on the task at hand. What do most people do? They jump in to work on the task at hand immediately. There's no strategizing, there's no working, there's not thinking about yourself, how can I do it better, it's not building the better mousetrap, it's about let's just do. And some of you are familiar with the be, do, have scenario, that triangle, and that's what very much what this is all about. We want to jump into action before we do the analysis on the beingness about who we are, what we're best at, how we can best make something, accomplish something with the talents we have, or how can we step into an improvement mode that we can accomplish it in a better way. So the greatest investment, again, going back, the greatest investment you ever do is an investment in yourself. So we need to spend time and energy. We need to work on ourselves. That's where it starts. Work on yourself. Because the axe, as in the Abe Lincoln story, is you. So sharpen your axe. And that's a great chapter, too, if you guys have ever read Stephen Covey's work. He's got a chapter alone, The 7 Habits of Most Highly Effective People. One of them is entitled Sharpening the Axe. So this story isn't just coming from Jeff Olson's book. By far, it's been around for many years. The next part of the chapter talks about results come last. And, you know, we're a very results-oriented society. We tend to base all of accomplishments or success on results. So he starts looking at this concept, and he says, well, if 95% of the people, remember he's got his 19 out of 20 fail, that's his whole, you know, concept behind this whole book, which is accurate when he looks at statistically in our country, 19 out of 20 people never achieve what they set out to achieve. He says, if that's true, and if totally, if society's totally based on results, and 95% of people fail, then there's a flaw in taking this approach. The flaw is on focusing on results. There has to be a flaw there. Why are we focusing on results when we know 95% are failing? And the reason there's a flaw, he says, well, look at the results occur at the end. How can you judge a course of action by its results when the results are at the end? So then that leads to look at and say, well, maybe then we need to be focusing on the actions we're taking, our course of action. And he's saying, well, that doesn't work either, because if we did what we were supposed to do, we'd all be skinny, rich, and happy. So it's not actions that are, you know, what are controlling our actions? Well, then we go back a step further back, and we go, okay, it's our attitude that controls our actions. So attitude is everything. You know, you hear that from some people in network marketing, attitude is everything. And he says, hardly, because your attitude is determined by your thoughts. And your thoughts can be convicted around a lot of things that happen, but your thoughts are controlled by your philosophy, your underlying philosophy, your paradigm, your view of the way life is. That is the foundation of how you build your life. That is your foundation. So what is your paradigm? What is your view of the way life is? And when you change that philosophy, when you take on a new philosophy, when you accept newness around that, when you get rid of negative paradigms, you get rid of negative beliefs and negative things and things that are not serving you, and you change that philosophy of your view of way of life, now you can. That changes your thought patterns. Your thought patterns will change your attitude. Your attitude will produce different actions, and your actions will produce different results. So you can't look at results. You got to start going back to, hey, what do I need to change internally? I got to go to the core of that nut. I can't work on the outside shell because that's not going to happen. That's what motivational seminars do. They work on behavior. Well, you are not how you behave. That would make every child bad because they have bad behavior. That means they're bad. They're not bad. Their behavior was bad. That doesn't make them a bad person. You are not your behavior. So you got to dig deeper than that. You got to dig deeper than actions, deeper than attitudes, and go to the core of who you are. What is the philosophy? What is your view of the way life is? And he talked about Jesus talking on Sermon on the Mount. He talks about two types of foundations. Of course, he talks about the people that build their house upon a rock. And when the rain descends and the floods came, of course, what happened? It might burst against the house, but the house did not fall because it was built on rock. It had a sturdy foundation. And then he talked about the second character, which is a foolish man. And a foolish man builds his house on what? He builds his house on sand. So when the rain descends and the floods come, what happens?
the house falls apart and floats away because it doesn't have a solid foundation. What is your foundation? What is your philosophy? What is your view of life? And that's what you have to examine. That's the core. Now, then he goes forward, he talks about what is the most important slight-edge strategy that you can adopt in your life. What's the most important, he calls this, now this is highlighted, people, most important slight-edge strategy, and he calls it continuous learning. Oh, do I love that. Of course, I'm so avid in teaching and learning and reading books and all these things. And he looks at learning. How do we learn? We learn from experiences, from actions we take. We learn from books. We learn from mentors. We learn from school. We learn. He says, it's all of that. Learning is where you continue to grow your philosophy. You build your awareness, and you grow the underlying view of the way life is. You grow on your philosophy. You constantly are open to hear new things, read new things, find new things, and you say, how does that apply, and do I need to fine-tune or tweak, or what do I need to change differently? Now, learning is critical, and he says continuous learning, so it's nonstop. Now, this is where he gives a statistic that just, I read it to my husband the other day because I thought it was so overwhelming. 58%, think about that, almost 60% of all high school graduates who do not go on to college never read another book. That statistic blew me away, and my husband as well. So we have a society that really just kind of wallows in that state of ignorance of not choosing to step into further learning. And, you know, and whether you read a book, he's not just talking, he's also talking about ever involve themselves. Today you can get books on tapes. So there's no excuse, even if you don't like to read or you don't absorb reading or whatever, you can always get books on tapes, you can listen. I go work out. Yesterday I was working out with Lydia at the club, and what did I do? I had my shuffle on and I was listening to books. I constantly want to be feeding my brain. I want to learn. I want to grow. I'm either greener growing or ripe and rotting. So, but to think that almost 60% of our high school grads who don't go on to college never read another book, it just broke my heart. And, of course, illiteracy is a huge issue in our society, too, but it's just crazy. So just building yourself into a habit of reading one chapter a day of an information-rich book or inspiring book or listening to tapes for 30 minutes, that small little activity can serve you in many, many ways. So stay in continuous learning. Make a commitment and stay with continuous learning. Day in, day out, day in, day out. It's the most important slight-edge strategy that Jeff Olson comes up with. Second thing, he talks about street smarts versus book smarts. And, of course, he has three types of learning. Two of them are learning by study and learning by doing. And, of course, the learning by study is what we call book smarts. Learning by doing is what we call street smarts. You have to have both. Book smarts are not enough. So for you who love to read books, there are many of you go, oh, Mary Jo, that's not a problem. I read all the time. Great. What are you applying? How are you applying it to your life? I have people who read a book, and I go, well, how does it apply to your life? That's usually my first question. Oh, Mary Jo, I read this great book, and it did. And I go, how does it apply to your life? It's a great question to ask people. Because if you're reading books and you just really enjoy reading books, that's great. So, but how does it apply to your life? What are you going to do differently? When I read Slight Edge, how is it applying to my life and what am I choosing differently around it? At some of the material I take and I teach differently in some of my seminars, and I add. That's why my pathway class changes every single time I give it, because I'm constantly reading and adding new things, adding new insight, learning better ways to teach people, learning better ways to, you know, affect the difference in their lives, learn, you know, all that. Or learning for myself, what do I need to be doing differently? Spending more time sharpening the axe. The other day I was saying, here's a great example of that for you people. You know, the other day somebody said put ads in the paper around, you know, skincare. And I thought, okay, great. I was contacting local papers, and I thought, wait a minute. Let's think about this. And I went on the Internet, and I started playing around on the Internet for a while about ads, newspaper ads. And I just started opening my horizon. Why are we stuck in the past that we've always done before? Get out of it. So I jumped on the Internet, and I started, going around and around and around, and all of a sudden I came up with USA Today. I put an ad in USA Today. You guys can look at it. Next, in the classified section under business opportunities, there's going to be an ad about my skincare website, because I'm just giving them a website. I'm not putting my telephone number down. So, and why can't I advertise all across the nation? Why am I stuck to Grapevine or Coppell, Texas? How silly is that? I'd be stuck if I were doing a meeting locally, but I'm not doing a meeting. I'm trying to get people to my pre-positioned skincare website. So why not? Oh, you see that? You just got to use your brain and just start, you know, apply what you're learning into experience. Put it. How is it changing your life? If it's not changing your life, then what's the value of learning? So it's extent that we do street smarts, book smarts. And then he talks about the rhythm of learning. You read the book, apply the action, then go back and reread the book. So it's this rhythm. It's a constant reading a book, find the action, then go back and look at the book again. Because you'll learn new things. Because now that you have the application in your life, you'll have this constant rotation. It's like it's a rhythm of just continuous action to continue to improve yourself. You'll see new things that you didn't see before last time you read the book because now you're taking different action. That's going to cause you to be highlighting different aspects of your life. And then he talks about course correction. And I love this one. He talks about the Apollo rocket. You know, the Apollo rocket is only on course about 2 to 3% of the time. 2 to 3% of the time, the Apollo rocket is on course. That's incredible statistic. It kind of is, he relates it to Thomas Watson's theory of success. You want to have success, double your rate of failure. What corrects the course of the rocket? Well, in a rocket, it's corrected by a gyroscope, which constantly is adjusting the course. But you and I have gyroscopes in our lives. Your gyroscope in your life is your dream, your vision. Your dream and your vision needs to be at the heart of what's helping you to correct your course all the time. A constant adjustment of the course is your dream, your vision. So you see, if you don't have a dream or vision, what's correcting your course? Nothing. Have a dream, have a vision, know the direction, know you're out there to create differences and create something big. Now, the slight edge is your processor with that gyroscope. And I'll give you examples of this. I think this is awesome. When he went through this example, it just really showed, it showed up huge. Let's say you get really hungry and you're walking down the street and you see a Burger King, and there's an option for you. Now, your gyroscope is your vision to be totally healthy, right? Because most of us want to be totally healthy. So we have that, that's our gyroscope. That's the, what correcting the action is all about, is a gyroscope. But you need to be able to make the small decisions, which is the slight edge. That's the processor of your dream to your daily life. So you have the decision, do I stop at Burger King or do I go across the street to the little deli over there and have a salad? But that takes a lot of effort. Easy to do, easy not to do. Oh, I love the French fries at Burger King. Easy to do, easy not to do. Your slight edge is making the good decision of making the choice of the salad and not the French fries. Get it? There's the slight edge in your life. Are you starting to see how the slight edge works for you? Another example, you go to a bookstore. Do you choose People magazine, so you can read the gossip columns about people, high society, Hollywood stars, or are you going to choose Think and Grow Rich, or any other kind of book or magazine that would help with self-development and help you succeed in life? Which one are you going to choose? Easy to do, easy not to do. Your gyroscope tells you to choose the personal development book because you want to be the best you can be, and it's part of achieving your dream. Your slight edge, the processor, is what is saying, oh, so it keeps you from making a bad decision to make the right decision. Every little day is a day about making good decisions that compound themselves over time. That's the slight edge. You're in a group of friends. They're all complaining and whining about their bosses, their jobs. Do you step up and change the topic of conversation? Or are you going to just sit back and let them go through their whiny and whatever? Some of you sit back and go, well, Mary Jo, but I didn't participate in it. Well, wait a minute. Change the subject. Get them off of the negative and on the positive. Anytime you're around that environment, it's going to impact you. So knowing the slight edge, you make the adjustment automatically. Once you make right choices, you want to make the right ones that serve you. And look at your Manatech business and see how that's happening in the Manatech business. The same thing. You hang around whiny people, complaining people, guess what? Negative to you. You got to make a choice right now. You know your gyroscope is saying this can't be right, so what are you doing different about it? Some of you get stuck in it can't be right, but you don't know what to do about it. Talk to a mentor. Talk to somebody else. Find out what to do about it. They can give you suggestions, but you got to make a change. You can't stay in doing the same thing over and over again because you're going to get the same results. So you got to change, right? You have a system that you're using in your business that's not working for you. Well, make a change. Don't keep doing what you've been doing if it's not serving you. You have to adjust the course. The right edge tells you to make right choices. And as you get more and more convicted on this, it'll come naturally. You'll become a slight edge magnet. You'll become like that heat-seeking missile. you won't be able to tolerate things in your life because you know they're not serving you, so you'll move on. You'll make differences. Kaizen is a simple philosophy I've talked about numerous times about just making each day a little bit better than the next, and that's just purely against light edge. It's about making every day a little bit better. It's a continuous adjustment process from learning by doing. And you can look at history about the Japanese car industry. How did they take over Americans? They ate America's lunch in the 70s and 80s because what did they do? They weren't looking for the ship to dock. They were just making, they adopted 100% Kaizen. Make every day a little bit better than the last. Just make continuous improvements day in and day out. Watch the compounded impact at the end of the year. It makes a gigantic difference. He also talks about the third way of learning, which is through modeling. If you want to learn how to do something well, find a master of the trade and model yourself after them. So reading and doing is not enough. There's three types of learning. Reading, doing, and then mentoring. So you want to process and integrate the other learning you do and do that through mentoring. Find people who have done what you want to do and surround yourself with them. The last two things are law of association, birds of a feather flock together. I love the quote he has, you are the combined average of the five people you associate with the most. So what does that mean for some of you in your life? You need to start working on a disassociation process. You need to start disassociating yourself with certain people. That doesn't mean abandon them. I'm not telling you to walk away from people in your life. You love them. They're important to you. They're still part of you. But it's compassionate awareness that they're not serving you. They're not supporting you. So you need to disassociate. Does that mean you abandon them? No. It just means that the time... This is about how much time. Remember, you are the combined average of the five people you associate with the most. So you start associating with them less and less and build yourself around a strength team. And then the last point he made in this chapter was about mastermind, and we talked about that extensively on these calls. Masterminding is critical. He cited Napoleon Hill's book, Think and Grow Rich, where he talked about mastermind. It's creating the synergy of positive people going after the same energy towards your desires, your requests in your life, what you want to accomplish in life, and having a group that supports you in doing that. Very, very powerful to do that. Okay, let me get off that. Race through that chapter, and we'll just take a few comments before we get off the line. Great. Okay, any comments about today's chapters? Were they great?
Awesome.
I don't know if this guy's stuff turns you on like it does me, people. I just love it. Doesn't it just give you an idea of how you can just take a little bite out of your life and make some differences? Are you getting that? Is everybody getting it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Is anyone feeling overwhelmed by it? Okay, good. Don't go into overwhelm, people. It's just, you know, the slight edge is about never being overwhelmed. It's about one little bite at a time. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. Okay, any last-minute comments before we go?
Mary Jo, could you possibly send out your ad?
My ad that I ran in USA Today? Sure.
Yes.
I'll make that available. Sure. It was very simple. It was less than 20 words, I think. And I think the price to run it for 1 week was about $400, something like that.
Awesome.
So if you can get USA Today, across the country, $400, and I just thought, let's just test the water. And I'll be more than happy, people, to report back to you in 2 weeks the results of that. Okay? Anyone else? Okay, everybody, I just want you to get out there and just have a great week. Make this week a great one, and just make a lot of things happen. It's just fun to be out there, and it's fun to live, and it's fun to be impact people, and it's even more fun to create something. Be on a mission, grab onto it, and run with it. I love you all, and have a great week, and I'll talk to you next Monday.
Okay, bye.
Thank you, Mary Jo.
Bye.